Tonight, James clips a magazine, Mike makes a cameo, and we fuck a chicken lady.
Hey, this is James from ChildPunks.com, and another amazing solo episode for you guys today, and we are going to be talking about ammo, all the basics on ammo that you may be thinking. Some of you may be professional shooters or know a lot about ammo. Others may have not a fucking clue. So listen in today, and I will do my best to try to explain the things that I know about ammo. I'm not an ammo genius, but I know a little bit, and I'll give that information to you. So, welcome. Oh yeah, and this is a solo episode. We had an interview scheduled this past weekend with a chicken lady, with a person that raises chickens, which, you know, I genuinely wanted to know about. You know, in the future, I want to raise chickens. So that was I was like, yeah, I definitely want to have this lady on. And she just flaked, like, next level flaked. I'm like, what the fuck, people? You know, you schedule the interview, like, I wrote an email, like, I began it with an email, and I was like, you know, this is how we do things. You know, we record on Skype. This is my Skype handle. Like, we record usually for an hour, 10 questions, blah, blah, blah. And in that message, I was like, we record using Skype. This is how we record. The day of the interview, like 30 minutes out, I usually try to, you know, touch base with the guests and be like, hey, you know, so I'll be on like 30 minutes. I'm just getting wrapped up, blah, blah, blah. And I had noticed that she did not add me on Skype or send me her info after we confirmed it. So I was like, what's going on here? So I sent that email. 10 o'clock? Or no, was it 12? 12 o'clock rolls around. No response. So I had not heard back from her yet. By the time that the show was supposed to start recording, which annoyed the fuck out of me, and she finally sent a reply back 2 hours later, I think, maybe 2 hours later, and was like, "Oh, I didn't realize this was on Skype." It was in the email that I sent. We record using Skype. If you did not understand that, you should, like, how did she, like, she didn't even, like, she didn't send me her cell phone number. How was I supposed to, like, magic? Was I supposed to magically, like, via, like, telepathy, like, interviewer, like, wah, 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 wah. No, fuck, what the hell? Who would do that? So, she is blackballed from the show, and I will try to go find a not flaky chicken person to interview so we can all learn about that. God, fucking idiots. It kills me. Yeah. But today's episode is about ammo and not chickens. So I just woke up, I'm a little off. But the show must go on, my friends. So, talking about ammo, one of the first things that people tend to think... So, let's define ammo. I mean, ammo is made up of a few parts. You've got your cartridge on the outside and your bullet, which people usually just call the cartridge the bullet or vice versa. You know, they just, like, call the entire thing, oh, that's a bullet. No, the bullet is the projectile that the cartridge fires out of it. So, that's, like, the first thing, which is confused. There's a lot of, like, technical jargon and a lot of, like, things you need to know or things that are good to know when you get into shooting so you don't look like a dumb fuck. And if you generally go around and you call casings bullets, a lot of elitist, you know, tactical snobs will probably talk shit, and you should probably punch them in the balls. Fuck them guys. We want all the shooters we can get that are smart, and you won't know everything when you first get in something, so fuck them. So one of the other questions that pops up fairly early on is people want to know where the names for ammunition comes from. Why is a 9mm a 9mm? Why is 30-06 30-06? And that's, the caliber is the approximate internal diameter of the barrel, or the diameter of the projectile it fires. So a 45 caliber will shoot a cartridge 0.45 of an inch. So that's where it comes from. There's some funky weird ones, and then the European naming conventions is a little bit different. They measure in the European way. You know, like in America, you know, our AR-15 ammo is called 223.223. It's 0.223 of an inch. The NATO, the UN naming convention for that cartridge is 5.56. So, what is that, millimeters instead of, I don't know. Drop that in the comments, you guys. So, and we kind of went over already that the parts of a bullet for a rifle and a handgun cartridge, you have the cartridge and the bullet. And then you have the primer at the base of the cartridge, and then the cartridge is filled with gunpowder. Pretty simple. And that's the same for your rifle calibers, your handgun, you know, 9mm, 357. They all have those basic components. Except for a rimfire cartridge, which we'll talk about a little bit further down. Shotgun shells. Shotgun shells are made of the shell case on the outside, and that's pretty much the shell case and the primer are the main components. Like, if you look at it, that's what you see. There's no fiddly fangly things. The shot or the slug will mostly be inside, and you won't be able to see it because the plastic shell case will come around and cover it. Then you have the gunpowder, of course, inside. That's what makes it go boom. You've got the wad, and if you're shooting shot, then you'll have a wad cup, and that's it, what holds your shot in there and propels it forward. And if you have a slug, you will not have a wad cup. You will just have a wad that propels that slug forward. And then, of course, you've got your shot or your slug filling up the remainder of the cartridge until the top of the cartridge caps over it. So, in rifle calibers, well, in, you've got two main casing types, bullet types. You've got rimfire and centerfire. Rimfire, which, you know, if you have a 22 long rifle, you definitely have rimfire cartridges. They're called rimfire because they strike them on the rim. The striker will come and hit, you know, on the base, on the outside edge, the rim of the cartridge, which will set off the primer on the inside, and then shoot your bullet, your projectile forward. Unlike, you know, centerfire, which has a priming cap in like the base of it that strikes in the center of it. With rimfire, it's sort of a limitation of that cartridge where you really can't have a large caliber rimfire cartridge because the wall of it has to be thin enough for the striker to go through, or not to go through, but it has to puncture, has to push in that cartridge to set off the primer. If you had a thick wall, you know, large caliber rimfire, you know, casing, it's not gonna dent that wall in and set off the primer, which is why, you know, you don't see a 50 caliber rimfire cartridge. It would be so inherently dangerous. I mean, that's brass, which is what are used typically for centerfire cartridges, you know, except for some of those like steel, and I've seen some aluminum 9mm and some other ones that I've heard aren't bad. I actually heard pretty good reviews on them because they were popping up during the ammo crisis, the ammo shortage, for a really good price. So people were buying them, and I heard good things on them. And then, you know, quick Google Foo search told me that, you know, more people are actually having good luck with them. I was iffy. Aluminium, really light. Not as strong as brass. I don't know if I would trust that for reloading, but I'm not a reloader. I'm only interested in reloading. I have, you know, being in a tiny house, I haven't made the leap, and I don't have the space right now. So until I build my like 4,000 square foot shop to go alongside my 200 square foot house, which is, you know, I actually do want a really large shop and, you know, a tiny house because that's where I want to do all my stuff at. And then maybe even a recording studio so I can move this stuff out and just have it all in there and have it soundproof and have it sound good. Although the sound does sound really good now. I'm going to have to get used to my voice again. So, you know, everyone, like, when they hear their own voice, they're like, ugh, stop it, I hate that. And editing 100-some-odd podcasts, I'm completely used to it. But now that the audio sounds better, it makes my voice sound different and better. It sounds a lot different. And I was like, oh, that sounds weird. I can't, no. So yeah, I'll get used to it in like an episode or two. And with the earphones on the new setup, I can hear myself talking. And that's slightly distracting. So, which maybe I don't need them for. Anyway. Back to ammunition. You guys are like, damn it, James, you're always sidetracked on something. These solo shows are terrible. I'm going to have to like, yeah, and, you know, obviously normal drinking show game supply where every time I say use guys or you take a shot. Only Jeff Radke's left alive. Okay, so rimfire, back to rimfire. There's still things to be said about that. So we said that it strikes on the rim, obviously, hence where the name comes from. I thought about like digging into the history of rimfire, but I was like, if you're really interested in that, you can look it up. And it just seems sort of like boring. So you guys just want to know that rimfire, you strike on the side, the wall is thin, sets off the primer, which is on the inside of the cartridge. And it goes boom. of course, with that, since the primer is, I believe it's a gel. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's like a paste gel that goes on the inside of the cartridge at the bottom. Obviously, at the bottom. That, since it is like that, you cannot reload a rimfire cartridge. Which generally tends to not be that bad because used to be rimfire cartridges were really cheap. I remember back in the days, used guys, when I used to buy like giant boxes of ammunition, you know, 22 long rifle, for my Ruger 10/22, you know, $15 for 550 rounds, cause I like the cheap Federal 550 round boxes, because it's so hard to run out of one. Like, you take all of your friends out shooting with the 22 and shoot all day, you know, and of course you've got to deal with the fact that loading those little 22s is a pain in the ass. With the 10 round magazine, the tubular magazine, It is really a pain, and it goes through quick. I got, for Christmas, like 2 years ago, I got a 30-round Ruger 10/22 magazine. It's nice. It takes all day to load, but it is so nice to just, like, to just go full retard on the 10/22. Pow, 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 pow. Yeah. I think I bump fired the 10. I don't know. Did I? Is that even possible? If it is, I tried it, and I think, I don't know. Bump firing is awesome for you guys if you don't know. I was thinking about those bump fire stocks for the AR-15, and I'm like, they're really neat. I don't know, like, I don't actually, like, I don't seem that practical. You know, like, it just seems like, it's fun to just, like, drop a magazine, you know, just to unload the whole thing at once. But it's like, could you really control it? Like, are they that accurate? Like, I don't know, can you, like, with a real fully automatic weapon, there's that 3-round burst mode, which seems really practical. Full auto, just dumping the magazine all at once, unless you're just trying to scare the shit out of some, like, rioters, you know, or just, like, I don't know, just spray into the crowd. I don't see it being that practical. Like, you're just gonna, you might maim a few people, but I think controlled shooting wins the situation here. That's just me. And if it's a zombie apocalypse, fuck, that's not going to do anything. You need headshots, boy. So, yeah. Not really sure if it's practical, but it's fun. And for that, I'll just, like, you know, bump fire from the hip and be done. Rimfire. Well, like you said, rimfire is generally cheaper. It seems. Seems like the availability of specifically the 22 long rifle. I'm pretty sure the ammo shortage never hurt 17 HMR. Pretty sure that if you had one of those, you could find ammo all day long during the ammo shortage because no one gave a shit. No one was buying it. And if you had one, you got all that you wanted. I don't think I've ever seen that out on the shelf. So you go in there and you're like, oh, there's 17. Well, of course there's 17. No one buys it. Whatever. But 22, though, got really hard to find. Like, lines around, like, the corner at shops. And I went into a gun store in Franklin, Tennessee, for if you guys are familiar with Tennessee. They had an end cap of, like, 22 bricks. So, probably 500 rounds. $60. $60. Who's got $60 to spend on 22? $60, I'm going to buy some 223. Fuck that. No, like, and, you know, and this is kind of before Facebook cracked down on, you know, ammo and website, you know, and firearms pages. The firearm page of Mageddon. And people were in, like, some groups that I was in, and they're doing that shit. They're, like, 60, 50, 60 bucks was the going price for a brick of 22. And, you know, I just wanted to punch all of them in the cock for being jackasses. And I had to take a drink of my coffee. That's, like, I don't know. One, that's pissing in your own pool. Like, why are you going to screw your community like that? You know, like, oh, you just want to make a quick buck with some 22 that you bought for 15 bucks or so. I just kept all mine. I didn't shoot as much, obviously. You know, and during that time, I managed to stockpile 2,000 rounds of 22, which obviously makes me a terrorist, right? He's got 22. He's got 2,000 rounds of 22. He must be planning an Armageddon. Anyway, which is ridiculous. I remember, I'm way off topic, fuck it. I remember a news story a while back about one of these shooters, one of these mass shooters. And it was like, he has 5,000 rounds of .223, 7,000 rounds of 9mm, and like 500 rounds of .22. And everyone's like, yeah, really? Only 500 rounds of 22? I think you've got your stats backwards, my friend. Yeah. I think we've covered Brimfire pretty well. There are some funky, weird caliber. There are some funky, weird, like, exotic sizes and shapes. You know, they're like, so when you say Brimfire, people are like, 22 long rifle. Or maybe 17 HDMR. Maybe it's a 17. But then ask them for another one, and they're like, fuck, I don't know. Yeah. And I didn't even, I found out in researching for this podcast that there are indeed other ones. It is not just the 22 and its varieties. So, you know, 22 long rifle, 22 short, 22 subsonics, all those 22s. And then the various 17, you know. There are other ones, exotic ones, that probably cost a lot of money. And I don't know what they are. And if you happen to know, comment in the show notes. But yeah, which means they're probably expensive. They probably are for funky, weird guns that are probably expensive or hard to find. And we don't care about that. I mean, unless you're a super collector, you know, and you're really into it, you probably don't, you know, you probably don't care. And, you know, if you come across a great deal to find one of these weird, funky ones, then you have to go find the ammo. Like, one time, me and a buddy of mine, I can't even tell you what it is. He bought a funky, weird, old, like, rhino gun made to shoot rhinos on the African, you know, Sahara. Yeah. You know, it was like, oh, you know, I got a good deal on it. You know, and it's like, okay, well, what's the ammo for it? He's like, it's a weird British ammo they don't manufacture anymore. And you have to go on the internet and find either your really old boxes that are resold by a person on a website, or you have to, like, buy the casting dies and make your own ammunition and, like, modify a cartridge. And I'm like, what the fuck, dude? We found one of these funky old sites and bought a box of this funky, giant, weird-shaped bullet casing. And it was, like, $50 for 10 of them. $50 for 10. And they didn't even all fire because the box was like made in the 60s. Like, it had like crazy psychedelic colors on it. You know, so we had like a fire rate of about half. So really this box is more like $100 or $50 for five. And it was so weird. It was a weird, like, you'd pull the trigger, and then, like, nothing would happen, and you'd be freaking out, and you're like, oh, pull the trigger, and I have a, like, I basically have a bomb in my fucking hands right now. Like, I'm going to blow up and die. And then, like, then you'd see, like, a giant puff of, like, white smoke. Whoosh. And then you'd get thrown back 100 feet. Like, and then the thing you're shooting into just exploded. And you're like, what the fuck happened? It was fun. I mean, admittedly, we wasted $25 a piece, but it was fun. Oh, that's my alarm. It's time to wake up. All right, so centerfire. Centerfire is probably what you mostly have. It's probably what you're familiar with. It is the majority of cartridges out there. You know, everything from 9mm, 223, 30-06, all those. All those rimfire, 90% of what you'll see on the shelf at a store is going to be centerfire. James, what is centerfire? Well, you listeners should know. It is, so if you look at the bottom of a casing and you see a little circular difference in it, that's a primer. That is what makes it go boom. So you'll have your brass casing on your centerfire, and then there'll be a little circular, like, button. Your striker, your firing pin, hits in the center. In that centerfire position, sets off the primer, which then sets off the gunpowder and makes the bullet projectile forward and destroy things, which is what bullets do. So, Center fire can be reloaded. You can, so after you fire, you collect your brass, you have to tumble them, you punch out your spent primer. Once again, I'm not an expert on reloading. I'm only a fan of reloading. So if I get something wrong, do not punch me in the throat. Just leave a comment in the show notes. You punch out your cartridge. I believe at this point you tumble them in a brass tumbler to clean them. And then you can replace a new primer in that. And that's what makes them reloadable. That you can just pop out and put in a new ready-to-go primer. Whereas with the rimfire, you can't. You just can't. I'm sure some fucking weirdo out there is like, I can do anything I want to do. And they're going to reload, you know, rimfire, and they're going to blow themselves up. Or it's going to work, and they're going to be awesome. But you can't do it. You can do anything you want to do. Just don't be some weirdo that spends all their time trying to figure out how to reload a, you know, 2 cents cartridge. It's not worth it. Just buy a box. And then, you know, let's reload 223. Reload common. Like, you know, the biggest bang for your buck. Like, reloading, you know, 9mm and 223, you know, your popular calories there for practice, so you can get more practice. Makes sense. And eventually I'll get into it. I'll keep asking for, you know, reloading equipment for my birthday my birthday's in January, so I get nothing. They're like, oh, you know, it was just Christmas and we're all broke, so, you know, fuck off, James. That's what he goes. So yeah, center fire, their primer's in the center. They fire from the center. You get larger calibers, obviously. They're not restricted in size by casing limitations. So that's why you can have things like, I believe, the .25 auto. Yes, that's not rimfire. That is center fire. All the way up to, like, you know, 50 caliber or more. Which is cool. And oddly, you should look it up. I'll find it and I'll put a link in the show notes for this episode. There's a guy on YouTube, a kid, like, I'm not sure, like, he's one of those ambiguous age people, but he looks really young to, you know, my 34-year-old ass. His YouTube handle is Royal None Such. And I found him, like, just like, you know how you're on YouTube sometimes, you're clicking around and you just find random crazy videos. It was a link. It was like, how I built my 50 BMG at home. And I'm like, what? So I went and watched it, and he was like building from scratch, you know, machining everything and building this, what, you know, teenage looking kid, a 50 BMG that he mounted on like a funky tripod, all built from scratch. No, like, off the shelf parts. And eventually he got to shoot, and I'm like, and, you know, he has a whole YouTube channel of building firearms at home that I doubt he's even old enough to own. Like, I doubt, you know, because he's built some, you know, handguns. He's built a .22 handgun or two. He built a fucking, what was it, 38 Special, 357. He built something that was, like, handheld. And it looked terrible. And it had no sights, and it was just basically like handheld boomstick. Which was neat. It was neat to watch. Yeah, this kid's crazy. Like, I keep finding these YouTube videos and I'm like, that's why women live longer than men. 'Cause I think that's cool. And I'm like, I'll do that. Yeah. Sorry, Serenity. I like to do dumb stuff. Yeah, so definitely worth checking out. It's crazy videos. Next, we should probably talk about magazines and clips. And if you just cringe when I said clip, you're probably a gun snob. I don't give a shit. So sometimes I like to take liberals or new shooters shooting You know, because it's that's the best thing you can do to turn someone into a proponent, a helper, a supporter of the Second Amendment. You demystify shooting. You take away the FUD, the fear and uncertainty. You just make it a tool. And once someone understands something, they're not afraid of it anymore. You know, if you just meet someone that's like super anti Second Amendment, anti firearm, and you just ask them some questions about it, generally, unless they're just like stupid, like if they're just blindly following it, even though they're educated, usually like 9 times out of 10, they have no idea. Like they're completely uneducated on firearms whatsoever. They have no idea about any of it. And that lack of knowledge creates fear. Humans, throwback to like our caveman ancestors, generally tend to be afraid of the unknown. So it's a good, you know, you should educate them. You should not bash them over the head. Like they're like, I'm afraid of I'm afraid of clips that have more than 30 bullets that fire. And then, you know, like, some gun people are like, fuck you, you dumb son of a bitch. That's a goddamn magazine. Don't call it a clip. Well, now they don't give a shit anymore. Now you've just lost them. Like, they, like, instead of teaching them and having them learn and remove the, you know, uncertainty, the lack of knowledge and the fear. So they're no longer afraid of it. They just see it simply as it is. Now they think you're a dick. They don't give a crap what it's called, and they're never going to like guns. They're never going to be a supporter of the Second Amendment. You've lost them. So don't do that. Do not like lambaste someone because they call a magazine a clip. Don't do it. I'll punch you in the face. So there are clips. There are clips. It is, so like, let's define terminology here so that we know what we're talking about. A clip is a device used to store multiple rounds of ammunition together as a unit ready to be inserted into the magazine or cylinder of a firearm. This speeds up the process of loading or reloading the firearm as several rounds can be loaded at once rather than one round being loaded at a time. A magazine is what's used to feed the weapon itself, whereas a clip is used to feed the magazine. Clips make the loading of a magazine much easier and faster. In some cases, a clip is required in order for the magazine to work. So, most magazines that we know, like the AR-15, you know, like P-Mags or the Steel Army ones, are detachable. You can move them around, you can store them, load them up, insert them in the firearm. But some guns have an internal magazine that is not removable, and you can use clips to load them in there. Like, I used to own an M1 Garand. I bought it for a steal. I bought this at a friend was like, hey, I got this gun I want to sell. And he started describing it. And he got a good deal on it. Because someone didn't know. I mean, just plain, like, sometimes you just get people that they're just like, oh, I just need some cash. And here's this old thing that my granddad had that I don't fucking need. So whatever. He was describing it. He didn't know anything about guns, but he knew that I did and I liked guns. So he's describing it. And, like, I'm on my phone, and I'm, like, at the edge of my seat. I'm, like, I think he's talking about an M1 Garand. You know, like, I got some more information from him. I keep going. I'm, like, this definitely, like, he has a fucking M1 Garand. And I'm, like, that sounds okay, maybe. I'm, like, what do you want for it? And he's, like, I don't know, like, what, $250? And I had to restrain myself. I'm, like, I want to just, like, I want to be like, yes, I want that gun. You will give me that gun for $250. And I'm like, maybe I have the money. I don't know. Like, just hold on to it and I'll think about it. And, I'll go check and see if I have the spare money. I don't know. So I got a phone. I tore straight to the bank, got $250 and went right over there. So yeah, and it was enjoyable. And then I resold it for about $1,400. Yay me. After owning it for several years and thoroughly loving that firearm. And if it wasn't for the fact that I paid off my car and got out of debt completely, I would not have ever sold that. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. It's the best gun. So the M1 Garand, it has an internal magazine that you feed with an in-block clip, which is, it holds 8 rounds. It's kind of funky. Like, it's the weirdest little, like, device ever. It takes some practice to really get good at loading it. Cause, you know, unlike an, you know, a P-Mag or something, where you have springs and you push it in there and then it has, like, you know, sort of retaining shoulders to keep it from coming out. The in-block clip, you gotta, like, get good at bouncing the cartridges standing upright and then slide them in there and then, you know, force in that last one or so that aligns them all up. It's a pain in the ass, but you get really good at it, you know, and then you've got to hold back the bolt, hold it back. Otherwise you get M1 Garand thumb and get your thumb slammed by the bolt. You force that in block clip down inside of it and it actually stays, you know, unlike stripper clips where you line it up, you push them down. You don't need that. Like the stripper clip is gone. It is useless now. You don't need it. The M-Block clip will stay inside of it, holding the cartridges in place to be fired. And the neat thing about the M1 Garand is after you, when you shoot that last shell, the last cartridge, it'll pop up out and it'll make a ping, you know, it flies up there. And if you want to be really cool and impress your girlfriend, you can, like, throw out your hand and catch it and be like, ah, I got this. just fun thing. Yeah, you can tell that I really like the M1 Garand. It's what a neat piece of history. But yeah, so that's an in-block clip. Like I said, there are stripper clips that go for certain, a lot of the European type weapons will use stripper clips. I think the AK-47s, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm an AR-15 kind of guy. I believe you can get rounds of, oh God, what does the AK-47 take? Ah, brain fart on the air. It's 6.7 by wow. Well, I forgot the caliber that the AK-47 takes. 45. Wow. Now I gotta look it up. I feel maybe it's just because I woke up. AK-47 ammo. It's a weird fraction. 7.62 by 39. Yes. 7.62 by 39. I believe you can get that on a stripper clip and make the loading of the magazine faster. Maybe the Mauser and Mosin Nagant, I believe, maybe will take stripper clips. You know. I don't know. Yeah, I've never owned a firearm that took a stripper clip that I know of, so I've never used one. It's just me. 7.62 by 39. Ugh. Don't flog me, you guys. Anyway, so yeah, stripper clips for some weapons, not a magazine. Yeah, so the last thing, and then we'll wrap this episode up, which from all the times that I've said and use guys, everyone except for Jeff Radke's already passed out, so you have no idea what I'm saying anyway. Whatever. And Jeff Radke's like, oh, that guy didn't even know what 7.62 by 39 was. Oh, Jeff. All right, so the last thing. We're going to just, like, talk about storing your magazines. And specifically, this applies to like all magazines, especially, you know, your handgun calibers and your AR-15s, your AK-47, 7.62 by 39 magazines. It works for all of them. I would say, like, if you are a great human being and you own an M1 Garand and you have in-block clips laying around, this doesn't necessarily apply to them with no springs, no wear and tear. It doesn't matter. Just saying. And this would not apply to stripper clips because, once again, no springs. The information I'm giving out is for magazines that have springs. Springed magazines. Spring magazines. So, great debate on the internet. And I've wrote about it in the past. And I actually have an infographic coming out on this topic on Monday of next week. Sometime in September, probably. Anyway, cool infographic, cool article. Should you store your magazines loaded or unloaded? You've got people on both sides. They're like, you gotta do this! You gotta do this! I do what I do. I see the validation of both points. I think both people that are proponents tend to be jackasses sometimes. So, should you store them loaded or should you store them empty? The answer is both. You should do both. So it's not so much the fact that you either A, have ammunition in your magazines or do not have ammunition in your magazines. It's more or less the loading and unloading that weakens your springs. So if you have it, you know, basically the compression of the spring and then the decompression of the spring is what mostly will weaken the spring and damage it. So if you, for example, if you shot a lot, I could see that having dedicated range magazines would make sense. 'Cause in that case, you know, you're shooting, you're loading. That is going to weaken springs a lot faster than either A, loading the magazine and putting in your gun safe or storing it, you know, wherever your bug out gear is, or B, letting it sit there empty. The spring will weaken marginally over a long time if you load it. I mean, you know, just compression of metal. It would take a long time. Years, you'd probably see a decline in springiness. Is there a scientific term for the ability of a spring to spring? I bet there is. I bet there's a weird term for it. And I bet some engineer listening is like, it's totally this, James. But yeah, if you're not, I would not recommend loading your magazines to full capacity and leaving them sitting there for a decade. Probably not the best idea, even though a magazine is a safe storage place for ammunition. It's built to hold ammunition. It's going to be a good safe place. What I do is I load half my magazines. So let's just say for number purposes, because I'm not good with math. Let's say I have 12 magazines, because I really like even numbers instead of, say, 13 magazines. I have 12 magazines, AR-15 magazines, if you want to be specific, which I don't. I have more. But I have 12 magazines. So at any given point, I have 6 of those loaded to 2 under capacity. So they're 30-round magazines. I have them loaded to 28. 60, you know, half of them, 28 rounds. And then every, say, 6 months to a year, whenever I'm feeling frisky, I unload those, and I load the other six. And I go back and forth. And, you know, if I happen to go shooting, then I will take some. I don't go shooting enough. So I don't have dedicated range magazines, which if you are, and we all should be shooting more, I don't see why you shouldn't get some. I mean, there's no like magazine shortage anymore. There's nothing crazy going on. You can go buy P mags or, you know, just for the range, you can get some shitty used GI mags for a few bucks. And even them were like expensive during the, you know, the magazine shortage. Yeah. So you just swap them out every 6 months to a year, whatever your preference happens to be. Make sure you stick to it. If you're going to be on a 6 month rotation schedule, you should, I don't know, get some masking tape and just write the date on there and be like, oh, 6 months, swap them out. That works. You know, and then swap them out. And then, like I said, you underload by two. That reduces the strain on those springs so that they'll be springier. They will maintain their springinosity. So, that's it. Yeah, that's everything I have to talk about ammo. I just know I like shooting, and it is fun. So, with that, you guys, DIY to shoot.